This isn't a fairy tale, though it starts like one. This isn't a tragedy, though it ends like one. It's something else. We're something else. We're the wonder, the heroes, the cure, the failures. We are progress in history. We are the news. But we are just girls who wanted to work. Ordinary girls. Excerpt from These Shining Lives by Melanie Marnich. My name is Becca Reiswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. The final topic of each month will now be decided by the highest tier of patrons via a poll. For the first 2 weeks of each month, a poll for the episode topic will be ongoing on my Patreon for the Master Storyteller tier. If you're in that tier, please don't forget to head over and vote. Oddly enough, this month needed two tiebreakers. Special thanks to my sister, who cast the deciding vote for this topic, the Radium Girls. The first time I heard of the Radium Girls was actually thanks to my sister as well. She was part of a play in college called These Shining Lives by Melanie Marnich, from which our opening quote comes. So who were the Radium Girls? They were the ladies who painted watch faces with self-luminous paint in the early 1900s. This paint contained deadly levels of, you guessed it, radium. The women would lick their paintbrushes to get a fine tip to them before painting. They were even known to use the paint as lipstick or rouge before going out, giving them a truly luminous appearance. But there was a dark consequence to the glow. If you choose to look up images of the Radium Girls online, do so with caution. The radiation created horrible disfigurement and has led to the deaths of many. What happened to these women is horrendous, but what a few of them did to get justice lives on as a truly inspirational tale. It created changes in not only health and safety, but also in labor laws. As the saying goes, safety regulations are written in blood. Let's start with a look at what's going on in the world. It's 1918. The Great War is over. But the Spanish flu claims over 20 million lives worldwide. In 1919, we had the anarchist mail bombings here in the States, but women also got the right to vote. The next year, Maurice Turner's Treasure Island, starring Lon Chaney and Shirley Mason, is shown in theaters, but is now lost to time. And then, in 1921, the Giants win the World Series, and absolutely everyone is listening to Marian Harris sing, "I Ain't Got Nobody." I could keep going all the way through to 1939, when the last lawsuit involving the Radium Girls made it to the Supreme Court, but I think you get it. It was a time of highs and lows, and even some middle ground. The Great War was over. This meant the return of thousands of soldiers, men who were looking to get their old jobs back. Jobs that had been largely taken over by women. The workforce was growing, and women were part of it. In 1920, the Women's Bureau was created within the Department of Labor to watch out for the ladies seeking employment. In her autobiography, Mary Anderson, the first director of the Women's Bureau, stated, "I think our most important job was issuing the standards for the employment of women. It was the first time the federal government had taken a practical stand on conditions of employment for women, and although the standards were only recommendations and had no legal force, they were a very important statement of policy, and were widely used in all parts of the country." There were great strides happening to improve the lives of women in the U.S. We were given a fighting chance within the workplace, and, as I said earlier, women could vote. Tennessee was the last of the needed 36 states to ratify the 19th Amendment on August 18, 1920. For anyone who doesn't know, the 19th Amendment says, "The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation." So I guess the next thing we need to know is, what is radium? According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, radium is a radioactive chemical element that is the heaviest of the alkaline earth metals. It is a silvery white metal that does not occur free in nature. Radium was discovered by Pierre and Marie Curie in 1898. Its radioactivity causes its compounds to have excited electrons, which then glow as they are de-excited. I'll confess a lot of the science goes over my head here. The important takeaway is that it does cause things to glow. Radium was historically used in luminescent paint and was thought to have health benefits. For health reasons, it was used in things like toothpaste and hair creams and in various medical procedures, but these uses were quickly banned in many countries when its detrimental effects became known. It has few modern uses outside of research, but according to the Royal Society of Chemistry, radium-223 is sometimes used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to the bones. Because bones contain calcium and radium is in the same group as calcium, it can be used to target cancerous bone cells. It gives off alpha particles that can kill the cancerous cells. So now we can get into who the radium girls were and what they were doing. After the discovery of radium, one of its first non-medical uses was as the luminescing agent in paint on watch faces. These watch hands and numbers would glow in the dark without needing to be charged by the sun. They quickly became very popular. The two biggest companies to supply these glowing watches were the United States Radium Corporation and the Radium Dial Company. Factories where the painting was done were opened in Orange, New Jersey, Ottawa, Illinois, and Waterbury, Connecticut. The women who painted the watches were paid very well for their work, and as a byproduct of handling the paint, the girls who took the jobs literally glowed themselves. For a few years, painting radium on watches was a truly glamorous job to have. The work was delicate, but simple. Watches don't have particularly large faces, so the girls had to be careful to paint smooth, thin lines on the hands and numbers. In order to do this, they would drag the fine bristles of thin brushes along their tongue or lips to ensure a precise point, dip the brushes in the radium-laced paint, and then paint the dials. This process was repeated ad nauseum, meaning they were constantly licking brushes that already had paint on them. The women who worked with the paint were assured it was harmless, and even had health benefits, so they would not only ingest it during the course of their work, but also took to painting their lips and faces, and wearing their nice dresses to work so the radium powder that was mixed in the paint would settle in the dresses. The girls would literally glow when they went out on the town. That glow came with deadly consequences. As Kate Moore said in her book, The Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women, the girls shone like the watches did in the dark room, as though they themselves were timepieces, counting down the seconds as they passed. They glowed like ghosts as they walked home through the streets of Orange. The first symptoms were fatigue and toothaches. The women who worked with the radium were in constant severe pain. The radium was breaking down their jawbones, making them brittle. It's a condition commonly referred to as radium jaw. As this progressed, the jaw would distort as it literally died while the women went on living. According to Deborah Bloom, there was one woman who the dentist went to pull a tooth and he pulled her entire jaw out when he did. Their legs broke underneath them. Their spines collapsed. To add insult to injury, in an attempt to disparage the girls' reputations and sweep the truth under the rug, the death certificate of the first victim, Molly Magia, the cause of death was reported as syphilis. Other deaths were attributed to syphilis as well. Doctors and researchers who looked into the deaths and illnesses of the workers withheld their findings at the urging of the companies. Grace Fryer attempted to sue Radium Luminous Material Corporation in New Jersey along with four other girls in the late 20s. They finally made it to court in 28, but the girls were dying. They settled out of court for much less than they originally asked. The first legal case to make any headway started in 1927 when five women who worked out of the plant in Illinois went after the Radium Dial Company with the help of a lawyer, Leonard Grossman, who worked pro bono, stepping into the scene in the 30s. The five radium girls pursuing the case were led by Catherine Donahue. After eight long appeals, there was success on October 23, 1939, when the Supreme Court declared that the company had to pay. Catherine gave her statement from her bed after collapsing in court. She died on July 27, 1939. Thanks to the efforts of these brave women who faced persecution in the media and their communities, a new precedent was set. Workers were now able to sue large corporations due to work-related injuries or health concerns. The dangers of radium also became front-page news. While it was still used in the paint for glowing watches for several more decades, safety precautions were put in place for the workers going forward. The horrible deaths and monstrous mishandling of the situation by the companies laid the groundwork for workers' rights to this day. There are several tellings of the events in pop culture. I first learned of the story of the Radium Girls from Melanie Martinez's play, These Shining Lives, which tells the events through the eyes of Catherine Donahue. It's a truly moving and beautiful piece, and I highly recommend seeing it or reading the script, at least, if the opportunity presents itself. In 2018, the movie Radium Girls came out. I have not seen it yet, so I can't recommend it or vouch for historical accuracy, but it is in my future watch list. If you want to learn more about the Radium Girls, the first place I'd go would be Kate Moore's The Radium Girls, The Dark Story of America's Shining Women. There were several articles I looked to for more information, but nearly all of them referenced this book or Kate Moore herself at some point. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWH Podcast. Also, a quick heads up to patrons. Last week I posted a few new things, and I'm nearly done with the first Patreon-exclusive bonus episode. Look for that on Saturday the 30th for Professor and Master Storyteller tier patrons. It's going to be a look into the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. And Grace Fryer was never forgotten. She is still remembered now. You are still remembering her now. As a dial painter, she glowed gloriously from the radium powder. But as a woman, she shines through history with an even brighter glory. Stronger than the bones that broke inside her body, more powerful than the radium that killed her or the company that shamelessly lied through its teeth, living longer than she ever did on Earth because she now lives on in the hearts and memories of those who know her only from her story. Kate Moore.